Hugh Miller describes himself as a left-handed actuary. We'll find out what that actually means at Taylor Fry, where he's worked for the past 10 years. And he's been involved with a wide variety of projects across general insurance. He's got a PhD in statistics, and his particular interest is improving the models and techniques in actuarial work. He's also been technical lead of Taylor Fry's annual violation of the New Zealand welfare system. I didn't even know they had a welfare system, so Hugh.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a real privilege to be here, so thank you for having me. It's the first sort of big plenary like this I've ever done, so wish me luck. When I was invited to do this, I'd initially assumed it was because they were short of white, able-bodied males on the speakers panel. Turned out that that wasn't the case. They wanted a sort of a more technical lens, I guess, about how sort of technology and innovation's happening. And so I've themed my talk around prediction, so how we sort of use historical data and things we know now to make sort of predictions about the future and hopefully do that in a useful way to help organisations do stuff. The title has a mistake in it in the sense that I'm not really talking about the future, I'm talking about what's happening now. And so I'm sort of going current rather than sort of future. I'm also going specific rather than general. So hopefully that works for you. I guess we'll see. When I was a teenager, I read a lot of sci-fi. And so one series that I enjoyed was Isaac Asimov's Foundation series. So this was written in the 50s, which is a long time ago. And sounds like a long time ago. And the premise of the book was this, that humanity had got to a point, and science had got to a point where their understanding of psychology and statistics meant that they could actually make really accurate predictions about how the future history would evolve, and so big geopolitical battles and so forth. And using that knowledge, one scientist, Harry Seldon, was able to sort of forecast basically the collapse of society and humanity, and was able to sort of come up with a plan to sort of stop that and sort of intervene and basically save humanity. So I love that stuff, and I guess the theme is that if you have prediction, you can actually have a lot of power and you can do a lot of stuff. That particular prediction obviously hasn't come true. So our ability to predict geopolitics probably stops at the point where we try and predict election results. And we've struggled to do that in recent years, and we know that election results matter, and we've sort of seen that with sort of Brexit and the USA, etc. So our ability to predict geopolitics is not very good. But before we get all negative, our ability to predict other things is in fact incredibly good now, and is getting better all the time. So I might start with an example that's close to my heart. Suppose you had 100 sole parents in a welfare system, so a benefit system, today. And the question is, will these people still be in the benefit system in 15 years' time? Now, 15 years is a long time. A lot can happen in 15 years. If I think back over my past 15 years, I've moved around, relationships change, children have been born, so forth. So this is quite a long-range prediction. And the answer is that we actually can make reasonably good predictions on this sort of thing. So here's an answer. So of those 100 people, in 15 years' time, we can predict that about 72 of them will not be on benefits. So that's the grey, light blue and dark blue there. The dark blue are people who sort of receive some support but aren't really on a main benefit. So 72 of them won't be on benefits and 28 will. Of those 28, only 10 of them will actually be a sole parent still. 4 of them will be on the traditional unemployment benefit, but half of those 28 will actually be on a disability benefit or a health condition related benefit, which is quite interesting, and it sort of raises questions about what role the disability benefit itself actually plays in the welfare system. And so we can make these predictions. They're not bad. They're reasonably robust. And we can sort of state with reasonable sort of precision what our uncertainty is around those predictions. More than that, we can actually say how age affects the prediction, so how those colours change if we had a slightly younger cohort. We know how gender affects the prediction. We know how somebody's benefit system affects that picture. We know educational attainment and how that influences the picture. We know if somebody's spent time in jail, how that picture changes. We know if somebody's been in the child protection system as a child, how the picture changes. And we know if that person, when they were a child, if their parents were on benefit, how that changes the picture as well. So our ability to make predictions and sort of based on the information we have now and in the past is quite advanced and quite sophisticated. This session is all about innovation, so you need some sort of schematic about innovation because that's what you do. So here's my schematic, which I've subconsciously ripped off somebody else's, no doubt. So the way I think about innovation is sort of as a bit of a tripod. So innovation can happen at a technology level. We can make a better computer, or at a technical level, we can build a better model, or at a business case level. So sort of new products and sort of ideas. My sort of perception is that innovation works best if it works across all three legs. And so the analogy of the tripod then is that if you've got all three legs growing, you end up at a higher place. The picture is a stool, but the stool of innovation didn't quite have the same ring to it. To give a couple of examples of that, generalized linear models was sort of a multivariate regression technique that got rolled out in the 90s. So that was a technical development and an exciting one because it was really for the first time you could actually combine a significant number of risk factors together to make a prediction. So that was a technical development. It was complemented by a technology development, which was computing. So computers were getting good enough and fast enough that you could actually put a data set on a computer, you could do some transformations on the data set and get an answer out, and do that in a reasonable amount of time. But it also worked on a business case level. So insurers very quickly realized that being able to build these models and predict risk was a huge competitive advantage because you could keep all your good customers and jack up your prices for your bad customers. So there was a genuine sort of competitive tension about sort of the need to implement some of these ideas. And that's sort of an example of how the tripod of innovation works, at least in my head. Another example that's more recent is that deep learning is a sort of a technical approach which is sort of a new class of very complex models that allow us to understand, or allow computers to understand types of data that previously it couldn't. So it can interpret images, it can interpret voice, it can interpret sort of written text, it can interpret videos. And so it's an amazing technology and it's really blossomed in the last 5 years. It's well complemented, so that's a technical development. It's well complemented by the technology. So a lot of these models rely on lots of little processors and graphics cards have lots of little processors. So there are now these huge banks of graphics cards developing these models. What's been interesting about deep learning is that for a lot of organizations, the business case has been the missing piece. So sure, you can understand a computer can understand what somebody is telling you on the phone, but it doesn't automatically lead into a strong business case of something that needs to be done. So that'll be one area where I think the business case probably needs more work for that to be a useful technical development for some organisations. So that's the tripod, and I wanted to spend most of the rest of my time talking about one particular technical development, which I'm a fan of. It's been around for a while, but I think it's matured a lot in recent years, and I think it's in some ways its time has come. I call it micro-simulation. With the risk of getting very, very boring, micro-simulation works a bit like this. So suppose you've got a bunch of people in your scheme. I'm going to use the language of an injury scheme, even though the application is obviously far broader. So you've got some people, you have their characteristics. So when did they join, or when were they injured, how long have they been in, what sort of payments have you paid on them, what type of injury do they have, etc. So you take those characteristics and you say, well, in one time period's time, so in 1 year's time, where will they be in the system? And so you can build probability models to understand that, so you can predict whether they make a common law claim, you can predict whether they continue to receive weekly benefits, you can predict whether the claim closes. And so the coloured boxes on that slide is trying to illustrate that people move through these different stages. So you can apply those probability models as a chain. So once you know where someone is after one period, you can apply them again to predict where they are after two. And so you get a pathway prediction of how they move through your scheme. Now, that's sort of one pathway, and if you project that person multiple times, and I've tried to illustrate that on the slide, you can actually get a range of possible pathways for that person. If you then attach costs to it, you can sum them up, and you get a distribution of their future costs. You can sum up the individuals, and that becomes a valuation. So there's an alternative way you could think about a valuation for your scheme. But of course, you're not limited to financial measures as well. You could actually measure return to work outcomes and predict them, or all sorts of other outcomes as well. So that's sort of the idea of microsimulation. It's not a very sort of clever or sort of high-tech idea. In fact, if you ask somebody to build a simulation of your scheme, that's almost exactly what you do. You say, take the information I know now and sort of try and project how they move forward. But I guess I'd like to contrast that to how we traditionally do valuations of schemes, which if you are an actuary or you've been around actuaries, this sort of picture will be vaguely familiar. So typically, instead of working at an individual level, we work at an aggregate level, and we work at a payment type level. So we say, what amount of weekly payments did we pay for all the accidents in 2017? And then we sort of roll that forward, and so we say, well, okay, maybe we'll pay 50% as much the next year and 50% the year after. And so you're thinking with fewer dimensions, so you're only really worried about accident year and development year, which are hugely important but a subset of what you know. And you tend to be working across payment types. So one person will be in sort of multiple tables because they'll have different types of payments attached to them. So you don't really get that individual picture from that approach. And so that's a valuation method that served the profession well for many years, but I guess I'm sort of contrasting the two a little bit today. The question is sort of why am I excited about microsimulation as sort of a technical idea whose time has come? And you know my answer because I sort of preluded it with the tripod. So I think it actually works well across all those dimensions that I mentioned before. So firstly, talking about technology, the recent technology trends that we've seen actually align fairly well with this type of approach. So computers aren't really getting faster anymore, but what they are getting is more processors. And that actually really suits this type of simulation work, where you're projecting lots of different people independently, and maybe multiple different pathways per individual independently. So that really lends itself to running in parallel and running across computers. It also lends itself well to hiring computers, so you might need a lot of computation to run a projection in a short amount of time, so why not just hire that via the cloud? So it sort of aligns with some of those trends. In terms of the technical side, I guess the first thing I'd like to say is that it really does technically dominate traditional valuation methods. So you can reproduce a traditional valuation using a microsimulation, and it's not hard and can be done very quickly. But once you've done that, you actually then have a very flexible and extendable tool. So you can actually add new predictors in each year if you want to. You could ask it different questions, so look for different types of outcomes rather than sort of the ones you measured last year. And you actually get increased in this understanding of different drivers in your scheme and system. So I think that's quite a nice idea too. But the main reason that I'm excited is that it actually aligns really well with a lot of business cases that we have today. I put four logos up there. I could have put many, many logos, but microsimulation is a fundamentally person-centered technical approach. And I think that's important because most organisations have declared that they want to be more person-centred and more customer-focused. In a sense, that's a truism. I was waiting for somebody to get up and claim that they were aiming to be less customer-focused and to build a couple of new business silos in the coming year. And nobody has. But I think that there is a genuine desire amongst people to actually sort of move in that direction and serve customers better. And I think microsimulation as a technical approach is sort of well suited to that task. Similarly, it's quite useful in terms of thinking about interventions and targeting. So you're able to segment your individuals, think about, well, given what we know about their likely pathways, what types of interventions might work well for them, how do we target sort of high-cost or sort of groups that are at risk of poor outcomes. So that's a useful thing to do as well. And the other part is that you actually get quite detailed measurement out of that for free. So if you're running these things every year, how's the system changing? And you can actually measure that change in it at an individual level and then sort of sum it up in various different ways. So I think sort of there are some useful ideas there. That's about all I had to say on the topic. So thank you very much for putting up with me. To summarise or conclude, I think prediction has gotten a lot better. It will continue to get cheaper and easier to do. And I think that the question obviously is sort of whether we can use technical approaches that complement well the business cases. Thanks.